welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good morning. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So this is live call-in radio. If you're alive, we have a radio, you have a phone, the combination will work.
It should work.
All you need to do is pick up the phone, punch in some numbers, unless you have one of the old hardwired phones where you have to kind of dial them. Remember, I see those on some of my old Western movies occasionally, but they were new technology at that time. In any event, the number hasn't changed from week to week. It's 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770, just like the station call numbers that we're on frequency. Anyway, you want to talk about the market? Not that there's anything there you'd be worried about.
Nothing going on there. No, it's fine.
Your portfolio, some strong recommendation that your financial advisor suggested would be an improvement in the dire straits, not the desired, but the dire straits of the market. The desired straits are much better than the current ones that we are dealing with.
Absolutely. Yep.
And remember, there used to be a TV program, and I think there was a movie, and certainly there was a book a long time ago called Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Sure.
Well, that show's not, at least as far as I know, it's not on the TV anymore. I haven't seen a book about it in a long time. But in that same category, we should now put Warren Buffett, who is best known for his hypocritical investment advice.
That's fair.
He tells everybody the best thing to do is just simply buy the S&P index and close your eyes and hang on and you'll be okay. Except that he trades a lot. His investment advice, they do not buy and hold. Now, he may buy something as a fairly long-term investment, but the bulk of his portfolio is pretty active.
Plenty of turnover. Yep.
That's correct. And right now, apparently the current advice from the Sage of Omaha is that the S&P 500 is the worst thing to own in the current high inflation environment.
Right now,
how's that for buy and hold?
Yeah, might want to just bypass that for a little bit. Unless you have a very, very long time frame. Right now, it's not looking too good. And so he had to kind of alter that, to alter his standard advice a little bit there.
So he even told an interview on CNBC Tuesday that even if you have a 10-year horizon, don't expect the return to be double digit. It's probably low, maybe mid-single digits. But just because of all the problems that have to be worked out in the economy. But as long as you're not going to look at the account for 10 years or longer, just keep on buying and holding. Wall Street will love you for letting them have access to your money. Along with that, most investors are in a structured portfolio that was determined by their responses to some questionnaire, whether it was with the financial advisor or an online site. How old are you? How much do you have? How much income do you have? How much risk tolerance will you have? How much are you willing to lose before you scream uncle?
They're all pretty similar. Yeah, they ask the same questions over and over.
There's a pattern of 10 to 20 questions, and each of the answers has a numeric answer, which you don't generally see. And when you're done and you hit submit, they total the answers, and voila, you end up with a 60% stock, 40% bond portfolio, or something very close to it most of the time. And this year, the 8 months that are history, If we go all the way back to 1976, when the Barclays Aggregate Bond Index was created, then this 60-40 balanced portfolio is having the worst year ever. Ouch.
How about that?
That hurts.
Yep. How about that? And a big portion of that is, I mean, equities are obviously taking hit in this drawdown, but it's usual that the bonds aren't getting hit as hard, even though they usually still continue down also. But now they're both in double digit loss territory, and that's just never happened before. So it's a very different world out there. And you know, we've been talking about it for a long time, how the bond market returns are not the same as they have been previously. Everything changed. We're going to have to, you know, with the rates finally increasing, you know, maybe a decade behind schedule, but finally going up, those bond values are getting hurt by that. And it's really showing up in the bond returns, both in, if it doesn't matter if you're buying individual bonds or bond funds, you're taking a hit this year.
Yeah. Well, the individual bonds, if you're going to hold them to maturity, you're going to get what you
put in. Sure.
Yeah. When you're in an ETF or a mutual fund, then you end up, or a variable annuity that has bonds in it, now you're going to end up with market pricing. As rates go up, the bonds in the portfolio are reduced in value. It's a teeter-totter. Interest rates on one end, value on the other end. It's just math when it comes to the bond market. It has nothing to do with supply and demand, unlike the stock market.
All right.
The aggregate bond index, which you just referred to, which is used as a benchmark usually in building 60-40 portfolios, has a 12-month trailing return. So we take the last 12 months of the bond index, and it is minus 14.87%. That's not safety in most people's minds, but
and it wasn't what they expected when they built a 60-40 portfolio. They expected a positive return on the bonds, regardless of what was happening to the equities. And it's just that's just not there anymore. It doesn't exist, and it's not going to for some time.
So to get an update on what's going on in the market, register for our October 1st webinar, the stock market update. This is our last chance on the air to promote this and remind you to register, because next weekend we are being preempted by college sports. We've been notified. I don't know who's playing or what game, but in any event, we are being kicked to the sidelines for 1 week.
Benched, if you will.
but that'll give us some extra time to, it really doesn't give us any extra time to prepare for.
No, it doesn't. Sounds
the webinar.
Good, though, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have to prepare for a show. I can work on the webinar. Yeah.
Work on the webinar. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
we like to wait till just the final few days to make sure if anything comes up, we've got that in the webinar. We want to address what's coming up right now. And that's the kind of information that you're going to get in our webinar.
Anyway, register for that at iriradio.com, iriradio.com. Okay, so we've just been told that next weekend is WSU football. So
there we go. Thank you, Brady. Yeah.
Yeah, I won't be listening. I'm sure I'll have some other things to do. But if you want to do not miss the October 1st, that's Saturday morning, 9 o'clock, stock market update. There is a ton of stuff on the agenda in the market to try and figure out what's happening. And anybody who is relatively new to the investment arena probably was told, hey, the market always goes up. It's a slam dunk. You know, just put your money in. You know, just look at Bitcoin. Oh, no, maybe not. We don't forget that. But I'm sure there's something there that if you just look at the chart from 1926, do not worry. All you have to do is live 60 or 70 years and you're going to be just fine. Except, you know, reality doesn't work that way. And in reality is, in fact, that life is hard. Business is hard, and it doesn't matter which business you pick. Just think of how much fun we had watching Seinfeld, a really dumb show. It's a show about some friends.
A show about nothing, yeah.
Yeah, it's some friends walking around New York trying to figure out how to get by. Oh, well, yeah, no, you did what? You're good. Well, I'll see you there. I mean, it was a dumb show, but we laughed, and it was entertaining. But if you listen to Jerry Seinfeld when he was on the David Letterman show, he said, you know, that was really hard. It's hard work to find writers who can write funny stuff every week. Now, my grandkids have taken to calling my wife and me silly. But let me assure you, we have not always been that way.
Right, right. that's usually a matter of perspective when you're talking about grandkids, yeah.
I guess that's true. but, you know, as far as a comedy show, if they could just generate tons and tons of material on a regular basis, life would be pretty easy. We could all go on the road and make a ton of money. But Chris Rock, who, if you watch him on Netflix, is flawless. But
correct.
There's a ton of hard work that goes into it. He had a tour that he was talking about recently, and he said, in order to do the tour in an arena, I do 40 or 50 shows in a little no-name comedy club in the local town. And he's been known halfway through his shtick saying, I'm going to have to cut some of this stuff out, aren't I?
can't leave that stuff in. But you know, he wants to have those bad nights, those bad performances, those jokes that don't work, not on the big stage. You have to work those out on the, but you know, previously, so that you know when you get on stage, everything is working well. And you know, it works the same way, a lot the same way in investing. If you're you know, just getting into investing, just starting, there are plenty of people out there that are going to tell you, hey, investing's easy. You know, I don't know how many times I've heard, if you have 15 minutes a day, that's all you need and you're fine. There's really nothing to this. And it's just not true. Investing is hard. It's hard to make it work. It's hard to stay disciplined. It's hard to keep applying the same discipline to your portfolio when things aren't going well. You have to go through a lot of things before you really get comfortable with investing. And it's tough. It is not easy. And don't let anyone tell you, hey, investing's easy. Everyone should be doing this. It's just not true.
But we should probably take a break. That part's probably true.
Okay, we'll go ahead and get our first break in here today. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have our next market update where we cover, you know, what's going on in the market, the economy. That is scheduled for Saturday, October 1st at 9 o'clock in the morning. You can register for that by going to IRIradio.com. That is IRIradio.com. Go to the webinar page and there's a registration link there. Give it a click. You'll get an email back. And on October 1st, 9 o'clock, you can give that link a click. You'll be live online with us. You'll be able to see the charts we're talking about finally and be able to get a little more clarity about what's going on around the world and out there in the markets here in the United States. We also have plenty of time always to answer your questions. If you have questions about, you know, the economy or the market in general, or if you have specific securities you'd like to know about, you want a second opinion on whether they should be in your portfolio or not, we'd be happy to do that. And that's a good time to get that done. So again, you can register for that at IRIradio.com. If you have questions for us this morning, we'd love to talk to you. Feel free to give us a call. That number is 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. We're out for a quick break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
A miniature walked in the joint. I could see you were a man of distinction, a real big spender, good looking, so refined.
Well, I don't know about the last part, but big spender, Mr. Biden, President Biden, has that in spades. And
got it going on.
That's right. And we have one of the funniest set of conflicting circumstances that we've seen in a long time on Tuesday, when Mr. Biden and staff and congressional people were having a party celebrating the inflation Inception Act. Oh, no, it's Inflation Reduction Act. I read that wrong.
There you go.
So they are excited about the benefits of lower inflation as a result of borrowing another $1 trillion and pumping it into the economy without any need to do so, which is highly inflationary. Well, you know, even the press has bailed on this, and they're now calling it the Climate Change Act. But at the same time, they're celebrating inflation reduction. Inflation numbers hit a new high.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. Now, which one of these is reality? Well, I think the latter one is. And that's a real problem for the Fed, because the Fed is trying to create demand destruction. The things you buy, that's demand. You are creating a demand for some sort of product or service. So somebody's going to step in and supply that as long as there's plenty of inventory. And that depends upon the item. And what the Fed wants to do is raise rates high enough that businesses quit borrowing, that consumers quit borrowing, that the interest rate on their borrowing is so painful that they quit, or they lose their job and can't make the payment, so they're forced to quit. That's demand destruction. It comes with pain. And Mr. Powell, at his last big presser, said as much. There will be pain, recession, layoffs, loss of job, lack of income. That's pain. It's in the pipeline.
Especially when it happens to you. You know, it's always like, well, just a few people lost their jobs. It's not that big a deal. It is if it's your job. And that's when it really hits home. And that is the whole goal of raising these rates. They want you to buy less of everything, and they certainly don't want you, like you said, not borrowing any money to buy anything. So they're trying to slow the economy down, and that's what it means. And generally, that means you're going to need fewer employees. You're going to have lower production. You want less consumer demand. That's the demand destruction part of increasing those interest rates, which is why they're actually, to this point, still continuing, and they're still a long way from coming into line. So while, you know, the country's in good shape, all of that COVID money that went out there, a lot of people did the responsible thing, much to the chagrin of Washington, D.C., and they paid down some bills, they saved some money. So American consumers are in pretty good shape for a recession, but that doesn't mean it's not going to change the way that your personal economy works. It probably is, and it's only time will tell how deep that recession goes and how long it goes on, and how long inflation stays high. That's going to be the real indicator of when the Fed can finally at least stop raising rates, but we haven't seen that come by yet.
Certainly not, and it was the higher rate, inflation rate, that discouraged investors. And we dropped below, you know, if you've listened to us any length of time, you know, we're basically chartists. We're looking at the charts. And the S&P 500 dropped below key level of support, which was 3,900 until just Friday, when it was 3,900. Where? You know, it's up there. Yeah, it's way up there. And so we have lower supports, which are fairly close. And if those don't hold, we're back at June low, and the high probability that we're going to see something lower than par. Part of that is interest rates are rising. Duh. I mean, that's not news. So the 2%, the 2-year yield is really the one that tracks inflation. And it has risen over the first 6-8 months of the year. We know that. And as a result, with the ability to put money in savings and actually get paid to do so now, even though it's not a lot, it's better than zero.
Right.
That's competition for stock market. And the price earnings ratio has adjusted from 18 to 20 to the 16-18 range, which brings prices down. Now, the next thing that happens is earnings come down as the economy slows. And so the consensus is increasingly probable that a recession's getting really close. And in a recession, earnings typically fall 25%. And that we don't know how big the current adjustments are, but the earnings adjustments are coming down. And the classic is Friday morning's announcement. It was actually Thursday night after the market when FedEx said our earnings for next year are going to be one third lower. We are parking some of our airplanes and we are reducing staff. And what we previously told you about next year's expectations, disregard it, because we do not know how to forecast what we're looking at. And FedEx is the bellwether for the economy. Because sure. If they aren't shipping stuff, businesses don't need stuff and consumers aren't buying stuff. And it is the stuff that makes our economy grow.
And there's so much commerce that has moved online. That FedEx is really a big indicator of how much commerce is going on out there. And, you know, now FedEx is saying, hey, you know, the unknowns of what's coming up are so large now that we just can't even give you. They just pulled all their guidance. They just pulled it all and said, we don't have a clue where this is going. That's not good news in the short run. That's not good news that they can't even get a handle on it. And more likely, they don't want to give any indication in case they miss, because that's when you really get punished. So it's like we'd rather say nothing than tell you where we think we're going to be. And so they're just kind of taking their guess for next year to the sidelines, and they're going to wait to see what happens. So they're in the same boat as the rest of us. They don't have any inside information either. No one does. No one knows where this is heading, or how bad it may or may not get. We're just going to have to go through it and see where we end up.
Yeah. So Mr. Market said, "Oh no, get me out of here," and the market tanked. It did get some recovery later in the day, but it still closed lower than it did on Thursday, and it closed below the key 3,900 level. So while Mr. Market and the Fed were celebrating, well, Mr. Market wasn't celebrating, but the Fed and the Reserve Board presidents were all saying, that's what we need to have happen. Things have got to slow down. Then on the other side of the coin, on almost the same day, the administration has been working with railroads and their unions and managed to reach an agreement for a 14% wage hike, which is not making the Federal Reserve happy at all, because Mr. President Biden is saying, hey, inflation, that's really good stuff. That's going to buy me votes. Can we give these guys good pay raise? And then guess what happens? There's a domino effect. Unions, which were basically had the legs knocked out from underneath them when Reagan fired the air traffic controllers back in the early 80s, they lost union membership year after year after year. They had no power because there were plenty of people to go to work. That has reversed. Businesses need people, and it's going to take quite a while to hire or train robots, buy and build and train robots to do work that individuals do. The unions now have control over labor negotiations. And now that Mr. Biden said 14% is a good benchmark, guess what's going to happen to wage inflation over the next several years? Reducing interest rates in a wage inflation spiral is extremely difficult. These high rates are not likely to disappear anytime soon. The bond market is going to remain under pressure for an extended period of time, even if, I'll say when, inflation begins to moderate. Don't expect it to drop quickly. Part of which is this wage in wage spiral I just mentioned. The other part is real estate takes a long time to cool off, and it is the largest component of inflation that the Fed measures in any of their various.
And even when it starts to cool off, it takes a long time to get into the inflation number. It's about a year lag. So it takes a long time for that to get in. And then when those inflation numbers are increasing as they have been over the previous few years, like you said, Don, it takes a long time to wring those out of the inflation number. And a lot of that is just the way it's calculated. And it takes a long time for those to get in, takes a long time for them to get out. So between, you know, wage increases, which keep demand up, and things like real estate, which is a huge piece of the consumer price index, boy, inflation is looking really, really sticky at this point.
So the whole situation we're in is pretty messy right now, and it's not easy. This is, as we said in the last segment, particularly for the 60-40 portfolio and anybody else in the market, this has been one of the toughest 8 months ever in the market. Even without regard to the 60-40, to find a market like this, you have to go back to the early 1800s when there were no computers, and they were just a bunch of people standing underneath a tree on Wall and Broad. I mean, that's a long time ago.
The Buttonwood Tree, yeah.
Just hanging out.
They used to get together and have the conversation about what was going on, and now, you know, everybody knows everything instantly. The information is disseminated globally in an instant. And so, you know, we've talked about that before. Markets are moving much faster. But things like sticky inflation are still going to take a great deal of time to straighten out. It's not going to be, well, you know, we raised rates, therefore inflation, well, a couple months will be okay. Probably not going to happen. It's going to take longer than that. We are at the bottom of the hour here. Time to get out of here for another break. I'd like to remind everyone that we have a weekly email newsletter, The Week in Review. If you'd like to start receiving that, you need to send us an email. Send that email to help@iriradio.com. That's help@iriradio.com. Just put Week in Review in the subject line, and then we need your first and last name to get you in the system, and you'll begin receiving that on Monday. It goes out most Mondays, and it's a pretty good look at, you know, the financial news of the week, give you a good idea about things that are important, things that you need to take note of, and maybe even more importantly, things you can safely ignore, because the financial news is full of lots of noise, and you don't need to hear all of it. That's a pretty good filter. So again, you can send us that email at help@iriradio.com. If you'd like to give us a call this morning, that number is 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. You are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We will be right back.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count.
You know, I'm not a card player, but I'll bet Kenny Rogers is better at knowing when to fold them and walk away than most investors are in this market. I mean, this has been a very difficult market to even make that decision, because it gets these short-term rallies. And I said, what are we doing up here? Oh, it was so much, it felt so much better at a lower level. And then we climb the stairs, and it's kind of like the platform goes away. What comes into mind is a roller coaster, and you're coming down this run, and all of a sudden it's going to make a 90-degree turn, and the wheels are way back in the cart, so you're stuck out over the edge before it actually whips around. That reminds me of the Wild Mouse ride that used to be up at Seattle Center.
Sure.
And you get up there, and you swear you're coming right off that track, and you're going down in the parking lot. But that's
pretty close to what's going on right now in the market. I mean, there's just, you can't see what's coming, and that's one of the biggest problems. I mean, you know, in investing, you can never see what's coming. But as we always say, you know, investment returns tend to trend, and right now those trends are very, very short, and they are all over the board. And sometimes there's a lot of people moving one way, and sometimes there's just a few people moving one way, but still moving the index, and it's really tough to get a handle on what's going on out there right now.
So whether you're building a portfolio or a retirement plan, the spreadsheet that's underneath the pretty looking stuff on the computer screen is relying on a constant rate of return. This year should have scratched that assumption off of any piece of work that you're doing. There is no constant rate of return for your retirement plan or for your market portfolio. And most people's portfolios just simply don't adjust to anything. If you try and build a spreadsheet, man, they get really messy really fast, because you're assuming. Like, I just recently had a meeting with a client, and he wants to make an assumption about, what is my portfolio going to do? What is my rental return on my properties going to be? Pick a number. You like that number? Okay, well, we'll use that number. Does it have any connection?
Right. Could be accurate.
Does it represent reality? We have no idea. All I can tell you is that next year you're probably going to want to use a different number, which means your entire plan needs to be redone, and nobody wants to do the work. Well, they want the work done. They just don't generally want to pay for the work unless it's a really big account.
Right.
Big assets. A standard plan takes a lot of work, and software is expensive. And getting it updated, well, it's work for the planner, and it's work for the client, because you have to have everything brought up to date and re-examined, and everybody has to agree on the assumptions, though most investors don't understand what the underlying assumptions are, which makes
Correct.
Planning a difficult and messy process. We've been talking about interest rates and inflation and stuff, and rates rising. And there is a point in time, and it may come sometime by mid next year, where the Fed quits raising rates. And the assumption will probably be, because it's been wrong so far, that's a sign that the Fed will now lower rates. It's been referred to as the pivot. The Fed will pivot, right? From raising to lowering. And I would challenge you to rethink that assumption, because the Fed doesn't have to raise interest rates for rates to rise. Really? Yeah. Now, we have been able to get along with very low to zero interest rates for a long time, and that's the general assumption of most investors and most advisors. Because the Fed has generally been in a quantitative easing mode. They've been buying bonds. They've been buying mortgage-backed securities. They've been buying exchange-traded funds during COVID. Well, the time has come for the good days to end. I think Mr. Powell has taken a lesson from Kenny Rogers. It's time to fold and walk away. So they don't have to raise rates. They have already quit buying treasuries. And this week, they made their last purchase of mortgage-backed securities. What does that mean? Well, in the past, we've had pretty low interest rates for home loans. Who was buying them? The Fed. The Fed's no longer buying them. Who's going to? Going to have to go to the market. Yeah, we're going to have to go to the general investing public, people who are interested in fixed income securities, and see what they demand in the way of an interest rate on a mortgage in order to be willing to invest in it. Now, it's done through the big brokerage houses, and they put pools together to mitigate some risk. But the issue here is that the Federal Reserve is no longer soaking up the bonds in the market, and they're going to let the ones they do own mature, roll off, if enough of them don't mature in a given month, they'll sell some. That forces interest rates higher. Even if they aren't raising rates, they're going to have to price the stuff at a high enough interest rate to attract buyers. So once the Fed quits raising rates, do not assume that rates will then begin to fall. If we go back to the 1980s when Paul Volcker was dealing with a similar inflation situation, it was actually worse than where we are right now.
Worse then.
He raised rates, inflation rolled over for a little while, we had a recession, and then inflation took off again. So he spiked rates even higher, and he held them high for years until inflation finally got down into the 2% level. We are at a level where the Fed should be expected to maintain high rate environment for some period of time. Don't expect the pivot to be right around the corner because there's a rumor that inflation has peaked.
Going to take more than that. Yeah, going to take more than that. A lot more than that.
Jeff in Edmonds has a question about savings bonds. Jeff, you're on the line with Don and Perry.
Good morning, gentlemen. Yeah, I'm retired, and over the course of my working career, I attained maybe, I don't know, the value, but U.S. savings bonds. And I can't remember whether those have a fixed rate of return or whether that's a variable rate. And what would you suggest I do with those bonds today?
Well, they're not subject to the market fluctuation because of the contract of that particular bond in the United States Treasury. So your real problem is, okay, if you need the money, is trying to liquidate them, because it is not easy to get your cash back.
Is that right? Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. But the government, but, just like the tax man, the government loves to take your money, but you want it back. And somehow they're really hard to find. They just don't pick up the phone.
There is a website, though. If you go to treasurydirect.gov, treasurydirect.gov, you can, okay, calculate the value and get information on redeeming those. They have redemption tables there to give you an idea where you need to go and the number of hoops you need to jump through. It's like Don said, it's a little more complicated than they like to make it sound.
Treasury
but that's
Direct.
A good, that, correct. .gov.
Okay.
Yeah, you can go down to the local bank.
That'll get you.
You can go down to your local bank and buy a savings bond. Duck soup. They'll be glad to sell you one. Mm-hmm. Take an older bond back, mm-hmm, in and say, I want to cash this in. And they say, who are you? What's that?
You have There'll to be a lot of head scratching for a minute. Yep.
You have to go to the issuer called the U.S. Treasury. So you may end up going downtown to the Treasury Department or finding some way to get them delivered there. That website should give you the directions you need. I just know the last time I had a client cashing them in, it was a nightmare of a story.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I just can't remember if they have a fixed rate or variable rate, and I guess I'll have to check on that.
Well, it depends on when they're issued and the type of e-bond you have. Because the early e-bonds were fixed rate, and the double E's, I believe, are variable. But go to the website, they'll tell you what they're worth.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like you're pretty pessimistic as far as the future of the financial situation, the stock market, et cetera.
In the shorter term. Yeah. Long term, of course, we think America is innovative, productive, and is going to be fine in the long run. We don't look at things in long, long time frames, though, because people's lives aren't broken up into decades. You know, it's much less than that. So right now, in a high inflationary, increasing interest rate, lower corporate earnings kind of environment, right now we're probably going to go through a little tougher period. It's going to be way more difficult to find things that are profitable on the equity side. It's not that it can't be done. It's just going to be tougher, and you're going to have a better chance, mm-hmm, of failing than succeeding for a while. So, but that's all, you know, bear markets end. They always do. We just don't know when, and that's what we're kind of watching for.
All right. And we don't know how severe that bear market's going to be either.
That is correct. That is correct.
So,
you never know till after the fact.
Right,
that's right.
Right.
So what we know historically is that real bear markets average a 34% drop. And so far, this one's only been down 20, just a shade over 20. Oh. And with the rally, mm-hmm, you know, it's not that bad right now. But if you listen to the first segment, I mentioned that Friday's market and the inflation news drove the market below the most recent level of support. And it looks like the next level is to go, mm-hmm, back to June. And if the news doesn't improve from the Fed or on the inflation front, and the interest rates continue to rise, then PE ratios get adjusted again. And that puts us potentially in the low 3000s. That'd be quite a ways down still. So, but we don't know that. I mean, things, mm-hmm, you know, next week is unknown, much less next month. But right now, defense makes a lot of sense. And unfortunately, the traditional defensive tools, bonds and gold, aren't working. So we have lots of cash in our portfolios.
Okay, and, me too.
And you mentioned briefly, I may have talked over you, I'm sorry about that, about shorting. This is a very dangerous market to short for individual investors, even for professionals. In fact, it is in many ways the shorts that have caused some of the wild swings in the market lately when the professional traders have been on the wrong side of the trade and they've been hammered. So we've had very high volatility, and that, as long as things remain uncertain, volatility remains high, it's a very difficult market unless you have a very long time horizon and you're not worried about short-term losses in the value of the money because you're going to hang on to it for a longer period of time.
I know you can't predict the market, but if it's a general overall pessimistic outlook, wouldn't selling short make sense?
Theoretically, academically, in practice, it's a very risky endeavor for most investors. If you have significant experience in trading the market on a short-term basis, and by that, on willing to make a trade that you're willing to reverse tomorrow, then there's some shorting opportunities. But as a general rule, we do not recommend individual investors short. We have no idea how much experience you have, what kind of research you're doing, what kind of charts you have available, and what kind of leverage, if any, that you are using. There are a ton of variables. Most investors are not prepared from a training standpoint or an emotional standpoint to deal with the volatility and risk of an inverse position. But academically, it works.
Okay. How would a future outlook seem for the housing market right now? I mean, if it's pessimistic as far as the stock market, what's your opinion regarding housing?
Well, prices in the San Francisco area have already shown as much as a 40% drop from the high of the asking prices. There was a property that was listed at $9 million. It came back on the market for something around $5 million, and there were no takers. They gave it back to the bank with a mortgage of $4 million. So they just walked. Now, that's a high-end property. Prices are primarily problematic on the two coast and a few inner cities, which have attracted escapees from blue crime-ridden cities. So Boise has had a big bubble.
Texas and Arizona.
Right. Florida. Right. Of course, Florida's on the coast. So those areas are starting to show softening prices. Same thing in Seattle. There's some leveling out of prices. The rising prices that we've had over the last couple of years, due in large part to low mortgage rates, is over, because home 30-year fixed mortgage rate passed 6% this last week, and that will slow down buyers. We have builders who are starting to have trouble. It is not a market where you buy and you assume you're going to get 10 to 15% of your price appreciation over the next several years. We could go through low prices or flat prices for several years long term, because of the millennials and the Z generation. They are getting married, they're having kids, and they want houses. But the price of houses has to come down, and they have to have enough income to qualify for a loan. You know, that's the assumptions we've had over the last 5-10 years are out the window at the present time. Jeff, you've had some really good questions. We walked right through our break with you, but we need to get this one in so we can do our final segment. So thanks for being out there. Register for our webinar at IRIradio.com. That frees up the phone line.
We'll go ahead and hop out of here. Get our last break in here. I'd like to remind everyone you can register for our upcoming October webinar. Saturday, October 1st is when that's going to occur. You can go to IRIradio.com. That is IRIRadio.com. Go to the webinar page and you can register there. It's a very good place to get a overall look at what's going on in the market, the economy right now, and get some personal questions answered for you at the same time. So it's well worth your time. Again, you can register for that at IRIRadio.com. We do still have most of a segment here remaining. So if you'd like to talk to us this morning, give us a call, 800-465-8770. That is 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden along with the sunshine. There's gotta be a little rain sometimes.
Yeah, Mr. Market's been dealing with more rain than sun of late, and it doesn't look like that is likely to change anytime soon. But even investors who have been running, operating with diversified portfolios, which means I don't really care what I own as long as I own a little bit of everything, something's bound to work until it doesn't, which is what many investors are finding out about being diversified into international stocks. One of the things that has created cash flow into the United States in two areas, well, actually in three. One is the stock market, two is the treasury market, and three, and most importantly, is the U.S. dollar, are foreign investors who are saying, I can't take it anymore in my own country. I am getting out of here. Or U.S. investors whose portfolios are exposed to Europe and emerging markets, and they're saying, man, this is painful. You know, even losing money in the U.S. market, at least I know what I have. But now overseas, I don't even know the names of these companies, much less what they do.
And even if we're not great here, we're better than what they've got at home. And that's why that switch is occurring.
Yeah. So the dollar remains strong, and with higher interest rates, it's going to remain strong. And then you look at how countries have to pay back loans, which are generally dollar denominated. And with a stronger dollar, it costs them more to buy dollars. I can borrow money. It's kind of like a grandkid
Let's
saying,
do that. Yeah.
You know, you're going to give me an allowance. You're going to give me this, grandpa. Yeah. Well, that's kind of the way emerging markets have borrowed money in U.S. dollars because they were cheap. It was just cheap, and it was reliable. Well, now it's not cheap anymore, and they're struggling to figure out how to do that. And then was it Sri Lanka that went to all Bitcoin for their debt? I mean, it was dumb. And anyway, Sri Lanka.
It's hurt a lot. Yep.
Yeah, it wasn't Sri Lanka that did that. What Sri Lanka did was a year or more ago, they adopted a 100% green economy, ESG.
Correct.
They have run out of food. They have run out of fuel. Their currency is worthless. And they, guess what you do get with that? You get civil insurrection. You want to leave the country. I'll tell you, that risk is increasing in emerging markets as food prices continue to rise. I mean, our grocery bill this last year is up 13.5%. That's nothing compared to other countries where we see central bank raising interest rates to 75% a year because inflation is 100. It's doubling.
Now there's an emergency right there. Yeah, there are some people in big trouble.
So we have investors pouring into U.S. stocks, even though the risk is quite high. You want to buy dollars, you can. Dollars, in fact, in my end-of-week analysis of the various indexes that I track, dollars the only one that has a plus sign next to it. Everything else is a void. You know, are you sure you want to own that? You know, now we have heavy cash in our portfolios. So, but we need to know when it changes. So we look at it on a regular basis, say, well, things are improving. It's time to start putting sticking our toes in the water, so to speak.
But not yet.
But yeah, not as of Friday. That's certainly the case. So as Jeff mentioned about real estate, if you really want to know where inflation is heading, one of the leading indicators, which is a slow moving indicator, is real estate rents. They, as Perry, you just said, they take about a year, five quarters to work their way through the Fed's inflation data. And that means it's a slow adjustment. It's the biggest item in the CPI calculation. Rents are escalating rapidly because of government interference.
Yeah. Once again,
if we go back to COVID, we now know the CDC lied, that Fauci lied about the efficacy of vaccination and boosters and mask, that everything we were told had no scientific basis for it. And they're now having, the CDC's now having to admit, with all of that, they made bad decisions about telling people you can't go to work, locking us down, restricting us when we did go back to work. All of this government manipulation has damaged the economy. The rent moratoriums, the mortgage payment moratoriums, all those things are unwinding, and rents are now having to catch up rapidly. That's going to take a year or more to work its way out of the inflation data, which means the Fed can't raise or lower interest rates easily anytime soon. Our show is virtually over. Then sign up for next month's webinar on Stock Market Update at IRIradio.com. You want to talk to us during the week, it's 800-317-9119. Again, IRIradio.com. For more information, sign up for the webinar. We're out of time. God bless you. God bless your family and the United States of America. Have a great weekend.